The Tom Woods Show, episode 2279.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, chances are if you're listening to this podcast, you are surrounded by irrational, panicked people who think you're a terrible person because you don't want to lock everybody in their houses. No amount of reasoning appears to accomplish anything. And not to mention the media has done nothing but stoke fear and failed to provide context. Well, one of the many benefits you get as a supporter of The Tom Woods Show is membership inside The Tom Woods Show Elite. Recently migrated off Facebook, so if that was holding you back, no longer. This group will keep you sane and informed, and as an added bonus, it won't accuse you of wanting to kill your grandmother. Join me in there at supportinglisteners.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. I am delighted to be joined today by Mike Caprice, sometimes known as Mike the Music Snob. He has a YouTube channel with more subscribers than I have. What's it called? Become the Knight?
Yes, Knight with a K.
Knight with a K. And when I put out that general appeal, maybe a few weeks to a month ago, where I was kind of at my wit's end coming up with guests. So I went over to Twitter and I said, hey, look, if you're an interesting person, why don't you come on my show? And then I saw I had a huge number of responses. So I thought, oh, this is great. I'm going to have a whole battery of potential guests. I can't wait to look through it. 3/4 of them were people saying, I'm not interesting. Okay, then you know what? Don't respond.
So helpful.
So, and it's sort of like if you post on Facebook something like, hey, does anybody know how to clean out a gas grill? If somebody answers no, how about just don't say anything? How does it help me that you say no? I mean, I don't actually mean I need to poll every single... Anyway, it doesn't matter. Point is, you were one of the actual people who kind of, I think, responded. Or did somebody pull you in? What happened?
So I did respond, but I was, I think, slightly drunk and not actually prepared to actually present myself as best as possible. I have a bunch of friends of mine that are big fans of you and your show. And I was like, I don't know. I'm interesting. You're like, I'm almost convinced. What do we talk about? I'm like, I have no idea, man. And all my friends were like, why didn't you tell him about your Spotify video?
Well, so I kind of let it go because I thought, I don't know, maybe we can't find a topic that'll work. And then you made your most recent video, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And then you contacted me and I thought, Oh, no. It was one of your friends or one of your viewers.
I don't know if we can say his name or not, but I know exactly who it is.
Yeah. And he said, look, you got to get this game. So then when I saw the Spotify thing, I thought absolutely for sure, because I've heard all the same criticisms of Spotify. So I definitely want to get to the bottom of that. But you seem like an interesting guy all around. I like the music snob bit because I don't know. I guess maybe in a way I'm kind of a snob. And it's not that I hate everything popular because some of the things I like used to be intensely popular. You know, I mean, Yes used to be able to fill football stadiums, you know, in the in the day. So it's not that. It's just that, here's a music snob thing for you, then we'll jump into it. Let's see, the third episode of the Tom Woods Show. So as you heard, we're on episode 2279.
Congratulations.
Who knows why somebody would do this for so long, but I'm still doing it, baby. Still doing it. Episode number 3. I had Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull. Now, they have sold 60 million albums around the world. Just, you know, not too shabby of a figure. And I asked him the following question. Because in 1972, their album Thick as a Brick hit number one in the U.S. Number one. And the distinguishing characteristic of Thick as a Brick is that the entire album is just one song. It's one 45-minute composition. So that, you would think, any publicist must be tearing his hair out. How am I supposed to get publicity for a 45-minute song? You know, what are you thinking? And yet, it hit number one. And I said to Ian Anderson, if you were to try that today, there is no chance that would hit number one. That would absolutely never happen. So what do you think has changed? Because my thesis is that people have gotten stupider. What do you think? And I was giving him the opportunity to say, yeah, I think that the music public has been dumbed down. And instead, he kind of meandered onto I don't know what. But that was my view, is that frankly, the music-consuming public doesn't have the attention span or the desire for such intricate music anymore. And I really want... I'm not normally a snob, but on that, I'm a snob. And I tried to lure him into my snobbery, and it was a complete bust.
Well, I mean, it's bad for business, but, you know...
Yeah, that's true. Although I love how he's kind of iconoclastic. Like he really doesn't care. You know, he's got a zillion dollars. He's got a 16th century mansion. It doesn't really matter. But I'm sorry to interrupt. What were you saying?
No, you're good. I think it's a combination of a few different factors. Definitely, I think the public has been socialized to quicker, easier to consume music. And I think that is both a symptom of a problem and also contributing to a problem in culture and the collective consciousness and able to conceive. But I think it's also a symptom of technology. So back when these albums were coming out, they were coming out on vinyl, right? And what's the circumstance in which you're experiencing vinyl? Well, a lot of times you're with a group of friends, you're in a comfy room, you have these big speakers.
You're sitting at home.
Yeah,
you're sitting at home generally. So you're generally in listening mode. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And generally you're focusing on the music. You're not distracted by other things. And also, I mean, that was during the drug revolution as well. So a lot of people are getting stoned and having an experience, which, I mean, plenty of studies agree that recreational drug use helps enhance music experience. But I think those are all contributing factors, but I wouldn't want to put it strictly on, well, everyone's just getting dumbed down, because I think that there's definitely potential to expose people to the ability to appreciate this stuff more as long as you know how to connect with them.
Yeah, there are some things that please me. I'm not the sort of person who, if one of his obscure acts suddenly becomes popular, feels like, well, that takes all the fun out of it now. You know, if everybody likes you. I'm not that way. I'm genuinely happy. I'll give you an example. There's a guy, one of my favorite musicians, Stephen Wilson. He was in a band called Porcupine Tree
for a long time. I'm very familiar. Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. So then they broke up, and then they very surprisingly got back together last year, and they just sold out. I mean, not football stadiums, but big venues, decent-sized venues. I mean, I saw them at Radio City Music Hall, and it was absolutely fantastic. And they really, really labored in obscurity for years. And I read his book, I think it was called Special Edition of One, something like that, by Stephen Wilson. If you haven't read that, by the way, whether you're a fan of his or not, it is an incredibly good book. It is so good.
I'll add it to the list.
Absolutely loved it. I mean, I cover to cover, absolutely thoroughly enjoyed it. But anyway, he talks in there about he's brutally honest about what it was like to be putting out, frankly, very good quality music. And no matter what they did, they couldn't crack through. And then when they broke up in 2010, for years afterward, there was this legend around them, you know, that they'd been this big, big band. And so that they get back together, it's a big deal. And basically, when they get back together and they release their new album and it hit number two on the UK charts and they're selling out everywhere, this was like wish fulfillment, or this was like people kind of doing what they thought was going to happen, what they expected them to sell it. But that wasn't how their career was. I mean, they had been very, very, very slowly and gradually poking their way into the general consciousness. But being away for 12 years, apparently people had been spreading the music. When they came back, there was an absolute explosion of interest. And I was thrilled. I was genuinely, I thought, boy, if there's a guy who has worked his, I mean, you're reading this book about gigs where there were like two people in the audience. He deserves Radio City Music Hall to be full. Anyway, look, I got to stop talking. I think because I love music.
You're good.
You know, I get you on. I want to just talk. I want to let you talk. So before we get to Spotify, which is supposed to be the devil, because we've all heard that they pay peanuts to the musicians and all that, and you should feel bad and flagellate yourself for using Spotify. You're a musician, so I want you to tell me about what you do, and then tell me about what the musical preferences of this particular music snob are.
Okay. So I'm a guitarist. I started and formed the band Crusade. That's a progressive metal band. We just recently got our lineup settled, like in the last year or so. So I think like we had an album released initially, but it wasn't kind of confirmed what the lineup was going to be. So I wouldn't call that exactly the sound. But I think the way it's evolved over the last two singles is probably a better indication of where we're headed. But yeah, I've done that for, I don't even know how long now. I've been playing guitar for over 20 years.
Whoa, you look like a pretty young guy in these videos. You start when you were five?
No. I think I started around when I was 12. Like, I'm 33 now.
Wow. Good for you, man. I remember the episode of The Simpsons where Bart brings his electric guitar onto the bus and he says to Otto, I think it's broken because he can't get it to make a good sound. And Otto takes it and just bang, you know, immediately starts jamming. And so, yeah, the guitar works. I've never even tried to play the guitar. Is it a frustrating instrument to learn?
No, actually, it's one of the easiest of all of them. I think that's one of the reasons why it exploded in popularity at the time that it did. It was kind of the great equalizer, if you will. Anyone could pick up a guitar and learn how to make music and also have multiple voices on there. It was a little less intimidating than a piano as well. And also, you know, more sexy than a piano for sure. But yeah, guitar is only as frustrating as you allow it to be. It definitely takes dedication. It doesn't happen overnight. But, you know, if you derive fun out of accomplishing, like, holy cow, this actually sounded good that time. I need to do that again, you know?
Like, Yeah. Did your band do clean vocals or what?
It's a mix, I would say. I think we're tending more towards just singing these days. But I have a funny feeling we're probably going to integrate more growls here and there as we go on.
When I first got into metal, I just couldn't take that at all. I thought, what, this is just totally stupid. And then you get to a point where you realize that there's particular kinds of music for which that is basically the only way you can sing it.
Yeah.
You probably do not know. Well, I don't know. Maybe you do, because they're in the melodic death metal genre, which is not a million miles from progressive metal. There's a Finnish band called Insomnium that I like.
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar.
Yeah, I really like that. In fact, any Facebook group devoted to melodic death metal, they're always just talking about Insomnium. And people have to pipe in and say, you know, there are other acts out there. But they have a song called, and it's, you might consider it candy metal, because it's a little slow and quite melodic, but it's called Heart Like a Grave. I love this song. It's one of my top 10 favorite songs of all time. And Word? The whole, most of the song is sung in the growl style. And so I play it for people and they say, I love the melody, I love the guitar, I love everything about it, but I just don't like that singing. Whereas to me, I feel like that's the only way you could sing this song. That's the only way that works.
I'm going to have to give it a shot. What did you say the name of it was?
It's called Heart Like a Grave.
Heart Like a Grave.
And especially when you read the lyrics, it's just, do you still remember, would you still believe that this blackened soul of mine was once untarnished? That line alone makes me want to hear the song. Whoa, this is not Party in the USA, right? Something's going on here. I don't know what it is about cold Finland that makes everybody depressed, but a lot of that stuff comes out of there. So tell me what your tastes are, and then I want to talk Spotify.
The way I describe it nowadays is I like my music like I like my women. I can appreciate multiple different varieties, but I'm pretty picky.
Give me some genres and give me some names.
So my favorite artist is Steve Vai.
Oh, okay. Well, that's at least somebody I know.
Oh, you're going to recognize a bunch of these names. My favorite band is Dream Theater, with a close second being Opeth.
Oh, okay. All right. Look, time out. Look, I know people listen. I know you're tempted to say, this is all going to be inside baseball about music and I can't take it anymore. Listen, I'm speaking specifically to you, dear listener. I'm speaking to you, the listener who is tempted to turn off this episode. Do not, because we have valuable things to tell you about the crazy anti-capitalist criticisms of Spotify coming up in just a minute. But I need to tell our dear friend Mike here two things. Number one, I saw Opeth 2021 in Nashville at a venue that did not even require a COVID test to get in, much less the vaccine. So that was fantastic.
And you were there with my friend Dave Benner.
You know Dave Benner? Oh,
I know Dave
crying out loud,
very well.
Small world.
Okay, I love
not
Dave.
Not only was he at the concert, he was in the same row. We were texting each other saying, hey, I'm here at the show. And I look over and I was thinking, that idiot, he's not even looking. I'm sitting right here. The other thing is I saw Dream Theater in England, in London.
Oh, wow.
In February 2020, just before everything went crazy.
I have
the very, very rare European tour shirt, because that European tour from 2020 did not go on very long. I got one of those shirts, baby. So eat your heart out.
Okay.
All right. Give me a few more.
Periphery was a pretty large influence on me during college. It helped bring me into the more modern side of metal. I don't know if you're familiar with Periphery or not.
I'm not, but I'm making a note.
they kind of pioneered a genre called djent. That's D-J-E-N-T.
Oh, I do know that.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. They're kind of the ones who ushered that more towards the higher part of the public consciousness. Have you ever heard of Thank You Scientist?
Yeah, that sounds weirdly familiar, but I'm not entirely sure. I'm writing it down, though.
So I would call them like prog rock, jazz fusion type of thing. Like they have the traditional rock ensemble, but they also have violin, trumpet, and saxophone. And they absolutely destroy. I definitely would recommend their first album, Maps of Non-Existent Places.
I love that name.
Oh, it's a great name.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay, now let's move on. By the way, when it comes to song titles, among the best song titles, now I'm not talking about, I can find crazy, whacked out death metal song titles. I'm not talking about that. But among the most creative and funny song titles come from Morrissey, from the Smiths. If you look at his song titles, they're all screwed up. They're all screwed. I mean, they're hilarious. I mean, one of them is something like, "We hate when our friends become successful." That's the name of the song. I love stuff like that. But anyway, let's move on to Spotify.
Sure.
I like the analogy you made. You made a video about this. You made an analogy between Spotify and the retailers of old, the record stores that most of us don't even go into anymore.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is a useful way of thinking about it. But what is the real truth? And there's an elephant in the room here about, oh, Spotify is keeping all the money and the musicians are getting a few pennies. Well, there's somebody else who's being left out of that equation that you helpfully inserted back into it.
Yeah. So if we imagine the percentages as a dollar, let's think about it that way. That dollar used to be split up with physical CDs, as the retailer would take about 30% of every CD sale that came in. And if you were on a big label, the actual music label itself takes about 50 cents of every dollar, leaving the rest over to your PROs, publishers, things like that. And then the artist gets about 15 to 18 cents. And the royalty structure on Spotify seems to follow that model a lot more so than it does radio. And I think that's where a large part of the miscommunication is happening with a lot of these old head musicians who've been around for a long time, feeling like Spotify is ripping them off because they're the only X factor as far as they can see, right? I will say, in the age of digital streaming, being just a writer and not an actual performing artist has been exceedingly more difficult just because the payout is so small compared to what it used to be if you got on the radio. But the thing that really surprises me is most of the time that you see people sharing around this meme of like, oh, the Spotify CEO is net worth is like $3 something billion and he's never made a song in his life. How is he so rich? Normally is shared either by, pardon the term, shit libs, or it's shared around by people who have, I would guess, more socialist leanings. So they're like, you know, very anti-rich person, very anti-corporate. Mm-hmm. And how do they continuously overlook the music labels? And what specifically is making them want to fetishize trying to destroy Spotify? It's very surprising to me because it seems so obvious that the music labels are involved with this. That's something I still haven't quite figured out and I don't get.
Well, it's kind of like when people get upset at the oil companies and whatever, and they don't have any idea how much of the money that they're paying is actually actually taxes.
Yeah,
so the government is completely left out of that. It's just mysterious people and the wicked guy who's running the gas station or whatever. I mean, a gas station these days is almost a loss leader. You don't make anything off of this. You're just hoping people come in and buy cigarettes or something.
Yeah, no kidding. And even still, I mean, like the markup on a lot of the items in the convenience store is usually pretty hefty, but you have to bank on someone actually coming in to grab that while they're getting gas. It's pretty rough.
Well, now, your point, though, about the label reminds me of a guest I had sometime in the past few years named Rick DeJesus from the band Adelita's Way. And he was talking about, I mean, we weren't talking exclusively about Spotify, but he was talking about their experiences since they went their own way and they're not signed with a label. They just They're just on their own. And they said, suddenly, we seem to get a lot of money from Spotify. You know, how about that?
Crazy, right?
So he had no complaints about Spotify whatsoever because he was viewing it from that perspective.
So there's a couple of things there. Adelita's Way already had existing label relationships. Part of the reason why you would take the deal to go with a record label who takes half and you get left with 18 cents on every dollar is because you're banking that their network and their resources and their strategies are going to leverage so much more volume. That's part of also what I found hilarious is the people complaining about how little artists are getting paid are winning the lion's share of revenue from Spotify. It's like, okay, like you're complaining about this and there's people making more cents per every dollar who are making next to no money compared to you. So I would probably shut up, you know? Now's not the time to complain. But Adelita's Way in this instance, I think had those existing relationships probably. So they already had their gateway in to be able to leverage the volume. They already built the fan base. So I think in that instance, it would make sense why they would be seeing way more money. If you're talking about an independent artist, you're going to have to take on a hell of a lot more responsibility and a hell of a lot more workload if you want to keep all your Spotify money up front.
So in conclusion, like looking at all this, if you had to make a 30-second elevator pitch to somebody who has only heard the one side, how do you make that pitch?
Massive music labels take the lion's share of every streaming dollar that comes in as revenue to Spotify. And they should be the ones who are receiving some of the ire and not Spotify. Especially if you look at the revenue that Spotify brings in, they can't really afford to pay more right now.
Not to mention, if you look at the, as you were saying, if you think of it as a dollar and you look at how many cents Spotify is keeping, you were suggesting it's analogous to what the record store of old would have kept. And nobody was grousing that the record store is keeping all the musicians starving.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody, literally nobody ever said that, as far as I recall.
As far as I recall, that's also been the same. I think the thing is, people look at Spotify as radio because you're not taking a physical medium and popping it and like having something that you own for that matter and popping it into a device at home. You are having a more relatable experience to tuning the dial. And I feel like that would be the best way of looking at it, but not legally. So record labels before streaming made all of their money on CD sales and made very little off of radio play. It was kind of worked out that 50 cents of every dollar of the master copyright, the copyright of the sound recording, goes to a label. And that's all done through physical medium sales, whether it's a CD, vinyl, cassette, and all that. When you're on the radio, no one on the radio has to pay out the sound recording royalty. They just have to pay out the performance of the composition. So that all goes to writers. And I mean, the label would still see a small sliver of that, but that's how you could make a business out of being in Nashville or New York or Los Angeles and just helping other artists write number one hits. That's how you could make a really great living out of doing that. So when CDs start to die, the labels are like, oh crap, we have no way of making money anymore because this new medium basically acts like radio. So there was a law passed that instituted what is called digital performance royalties. And that is basically a law that makes digital streaming act more like the royalty structure of CDs as opposed to radio. Does that make all sense?
Yes.
Okay. There's a whole deep dive there as well, but I don't know if you want to go too far into that.
Well, however much you think to be complete in telling the story.
Well, I mean, in the interest of shoving it to big business, I find it interesting that if you look at some websites as to how digital performance royalty breaks down, it's supposed to go half to the rights holders, which is usually the music label, and half to the artist performing. And if you see the Spotify revenue breakdown for people on independent music labels, that's what happens to only the master side of things. You see the record label gets half and the artist gets half. But if you go to major label artists, they somehow are legally able to get away with owning the majority, if not all, of your masters, which is why they keep 50 cents on every dollar. It's interesting that the law exists and that there's a whole government organization that actually sets these rates. Yet somehow magically, the largest music conglomerates in the world are exempt from these or manage to somehow find loopholes out of them. It's a little sus.
Yeah.
A little suspect.
Yeah. Before I go on, let me say a quick thing that will help a lot of you, and you know who you are. If you are in business and you're getting buried by your competition online, then build your brand, your reputation, and your lead flow with digital marketing by Persist SEO, our great sponsor. If you're a small local business, you're trying to compete against large companies in the service industry, increase your visibility with Persist SEO. Or if you have low or no leads coming in on a consistent basis, well, website search engine and conversion optimization can help move the needle to a more prosperous business model for you. If you're tired of cold calling, use your website as a lead generation engine. If you're not showing up for your services on the search engines, then get found with Persist SEO's expert search engine optimization. All you have to do is call 770-580-3736 or visit them at ineedseo.help for a free website audit and consultation. That's 770-580-3736 or ineedseo.help. I'm curious, though, from your point of view as a musician, what you think about, not that there's anything you can do about it now, but what you think about the growth of streaming as opposed to people buying physical things in stores. Now, as a consumer, I used to enjoy that. Like when I was getting into Yes, for example, most of the albums I was buying from them were 10, 15 years old, but they all had these amazing album covers designed by Roger Dean, who was an amazing artist. And that was what drew me into each one. I would look, I would be transfixed by the artwork, and I would want to know, well, what music could possibly have this kind of artwork on the cover? And now it's just a couple of clicks of a button. Now, obviously, anytime I want to, I can get physical copies of things because they do make them, or they make deluxe editions for the collector and so on. But I kind of miss having no choice but to do it that way, even though I know overall I'm better off as a consumer like this. That's one thing. But the second thing is, as an album-oriented artist, well, let's say I've talked to a lot of album-oriented artists who don't like that people can shuffle the tracks, or they'll just play one song from my album, then one song, when the whole thing was meant to be listened to as a continuous piece, and that's being lost. The album is being replaced by just random songs. Does any of that bother you, or are you rolling with that?
I'm mixed on it. So I do love the idea of the greater piece being all of these little parts that are supposed to be listened to in a specific order. I also like the idea of the consumer having as much freedom as possible. So they can do whatever they want and screw the artist, you know? But I don't know. I'm not that precious with it. And I think that in any entrepreneurial sense, if you want to recreate the album experience of having people sit down and want to consume a large amount of content that is strictly audio, you have to meet people where they're at, and the times have simply just moved on.
Yeah.
I would say, I actually have an idea of how to try and bring back the idea of an album through a sort of interactive multimedia experience. Everyone's really into the meta. Everyone's really into interacting and getting feedback based upon decisions that you make. Everyone's really, really into music videos nowadays and having interactive content. So picture, instead of a physical album, you download an app, and that app opens up on your phone and it gives you like the title of the album and then gives you a few options as to how to experience it. But you hit play, and it shows you the protagonist of the story that you're about to go on. And it plays through a music video with the song and everything and kind of tells a story as it goes along. And then by the end of the music video, you get two choices or three choices about what happens next to the protagonist. And then depending upon what you choose, you go to a different song. So you kind of can design at the end of each song your own album experience as you go through. And I mean, if you keep the time it takes to complete the album down to like 30 minutes, you'll probably encourage people wanting to go back through it again. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, that's creative. I wouldn't have thought of something like that.
Pink Floyd actually inspired me to do that. They revolutionized so many different aspects, and they did it by just trying to think outside the box and trying to find different ways of communicating to people why they needed to appreciate the music more. And that's kind of where that got inspired from. Now, that's going to be like a multi-million dollar enterprise with, I don't know how the hell to monetize it, right? But I'll figure it out.
I want to at least hit on briefly what, as of this recording, is your most recent video where you touched on some material that you, or let's say a side of you that, as you say, you haven't gone out of your way to conceal, but you haven't shouted from the rooftops either.
Yeah.
So why don't you just confess it to my audience as well?
I am a right-wing liberal and I am a good person.
And I don't think that's possible.
Yeah, right. The fact that I have to attempt to qualify it to me says something really dark about our current discourse. Like the people who literally practice non-aggression are the ones that are being looked at as the genociders and quasi-fascists. I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
Well, and of course you're in an industry that is not sympathetic to, well, not many are, but that is not sympathetic to that point of view. You know, that Metal Sucks website, which is a news site about metal.
Yeah.
They are all like, if there's one metal guy who has one deviation from the standard establishment view, well, they just cannot attack him enough. And it's just incredible because you would think, given how countercultural metal at least started off as, well, these people are going to be the type to stand up to authority. Nah, they're a bunch of, let's just say they're a bunch of not very masculine people, I'll put it that way, who just go along with what they're told.
I find it so fascinating if you think about critical theory broadly and generally. It is about disrupting norms, and it is about trying to purposefully have to think differently or the opposite about what the paradigm is, because that's the only form of revolution. So, I mean, isn't it kind of ironic that now that way of thinking has permeated most of these institutions? So, I don't know. It's kind of its own irony, for lack of a better term, its own oxymoron. Like being intolerant to intolerance, if that makes any sense.
You were saying it's at one point in the video that you had made, I forget which video you were referring to, maybe it was the Spotify video or some other video where you were getting responses privately from musicians saying, I'm glad you said such and such.
That was my video responding to Adam Neely. Adam Neely had a very viral video talking about
critical race theory.
Using critical race theory, where I don't think he ever had to get his point across.
Okay.
He basically wanted to say there's too much emphasis on traditional Western music education just on this one specific era of European music. And I happen to agree. I think that it would be great to broaden out in our education multiple different cultures of music. I mean, still, just for practicality's sake, it's the most widely adopted right now, but that doesn't mean it has to be. The point is, he used critical theory and pointed out how racist one of the guys was, Schenker, who came up with this one particular form of music. And I'm just like, none of this is important. You know, you just want to talk about critical race theory and inject it in for no reason. And to me, it is an exceedingly caustic point of view, like definitionally racist. And I don't think he sees it that way. I don't know how he conceives it, frankly. I don't know how much he really knows about it or how much he's heard from a lot of the thought leaders of critical race theory. Like, it was so careless, exceedingly careless, unless he actually believes that shit, which I don't know. I really don't know.
Mm. But it is interesting that, you know, as you were saying, that there were people who said to you, whatever, I'm glad you said that. Somebody needs to say this.
Yeah, they were afraid to speak up about it.
They're afraid, yeah. And, you know, it's so odd to be told all the time that people who are afraid to speak their minds are part of the fascist uprising that's going to take over America. If they can't even say, hey, I'm not sure I agree with what you're saying, they're probably not part of the big fascist threat that these people have in their imaginations.
Yeah, chances are.
You know, when I think about fascist movements, I don't think about people being timid, not speaking their minds, hoping people just change the subject. But that is how a lot of dissident voices are today. They don't want their careers ruined.
When I think about it, I think about a loud minority of collectivists running around with clubs and beating the stuff out of people.
Yeah. Exactly right. So do you guys have a band camp or do you have a website for the band?
Yeah, we're on Bandcamp. Again, the band's name is Crusade. We're in the middle of putting our website together. So sorry, I can't do that. But we're also on YouTube and Spotify, though.
All right. Well, look, I'll put links up to you guys. I would be shocked if after this conversation you weren't on Spotify.
Yeah.
So yes, I'll link to those on the show notes page. And I'll also link to your Become the Night YouTube channel.
Thank you.
Also, so the show notes page, tomwoods.com/2279. I just saw that you were in my neck of the woods in December. You passed through Florida. There were at least two venues I could have seen you at if I had known about you guys. And
now I'll
have to wait for the next round.
Heck yeah. Now we'll definitely be back. Hopefully this summer. We'll see.
Well, let me just tell you something. Let me tell you something about Florida. I tried to tell this to Phil Labonte of All That Remains. He didn't listen. If you get invited to perform at an outdoor festival anytime between the months of May and September in Florida, you tell them no. I don't care what it is. It is going to kill you. It is so hot out there. Like, we all hate it. We, the fans, we hate it. I'm surprised there aren't more atrocities committed at these things. We hate it. It is so hot. It's unbearable. Whereas by the time you get to November in Central Florida, it is so pleasant here. November, December, January even. But January could get a little cold. So wait till February. February, March, beautiful here. Beautiful. All the festivals are over the summer. I don't understand you people.
Yeah, I have no clue. But thank you for the advice on that. I'm going to make sure to avoid that as much as possible.
You know, so you should do the kind of shows you've been doing in these venues that have air conditioning. And then we're all happy. Then we love you. We want to stick around. We want to buy merch. But not if we're angry and dreaming of having a big glass of water or something. I'm not in a merch buying mood at that point. So anyway, just advice from a music fan who hates the heat.
Thank you.
And who is, of course, living in the wrong part of the country. Why am I living here then? Excellent question. But we won't get into the details of that. Instead, I want to urge people to check you guys out and your YouTube channel in particular, which will all be available at tomwoods.com/2279. Well, Mike, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.